Good afternoon, Los Angeles and all of Southern California. I'm Farley Malaris, and you're listening to Astrological Metaphysical Radio, The Phenomenon of the 80s, on KFOX 93.5 FM, your talk alternative. Welcome to the show. Today we have a special edition of Astrological Metaphysical Radio. Today's special edition is called Journeys Out of the Body in honor of Robert A. Monroe's excellent Doubleday book that was published way back in, he opened up the Mind Research Institute in Blue Ridge, Virginia in 1971, and he published this book right then, 1971, a hard book to get a hold of, Journeys Out of the Body by Robert A. Monroe, one of my heroes. And today's chapter we're going to cover, and I'm going to read to you, is called 'Cause the Bible Tells Me Soul. So we're going to discuss God, religion, astral projection, journeys out of the body, and wow, what an information show today, huh? And then you can call me up and ask all of your questions, and whatever, we can discuss that. So I'm pretty excited about this chapter because it blows away the Bible. Whenever we want to blow away the Bible, we always try to do it here in the Astrology Hour. So it always makes things interesting. We're going to do the first half hour, of course, of the show commercial-free, which is traditional. And then we'll give our appeals during the second part of the show. All right, let's take a look at this chapter in Journeys Out of the Body by Robert A. Monroe. And this book has a special meaning to it because it was the book that my best friend Michael Alcana was reading right before he died. He was in the hospital, and he had had a very, very critical auto accident, and this is the book that he requested. And the book is interesting because, just to give you an idea of some of the chapters covered, and if you can find this book, it's tough to find, but Infinity and Eternity are covered, and Postmortem, and 'Cause the Bible Tells Me So, which is what we're going to talk about today, and Angels and Archetypes, and Intelligent Animals, Round Holes and Square Pegs, The Second Body, Preliminary Exercises, The Separation Process. This is pretty cool. This book is practical astral projection as close as I can make it. Let's jump into this chapter, which is called 'Cause the Bible Tells Me So. And I figured this chapter was done so well that I guess the best way I could send it to you was just to do a little reader's theater here, because that's what I like to do. And I was so impressed with this chapter. It made such incredible food for thought, because, you know, the heavy thing about this topic and this show is that what I really think my attempt is by doing this radio program is I'm really trying to break the conditioning of dogma that exists. You know, so many of us try to walk away from the explanations in the Bible or the explanations in fundamental religions. Even as far as I've gone metaphysically, it's so hard sometimes for me to escape the symbol of God as the Father and as a being, as like a little old man in heaven somewhere, and Jesus is his little son, you know, and all this stuff. You know, there's so much of a conditioning that goes on throughout history and ethical, cultural backgrounds and such, that it's difficult for us to escape. Even if you're into metaphysics and you've done channeling and you've done astral projection and you've tasted the ether of some pretty very heavy, intense possibilities, astrologically and metaphysically involved, then oftentimes it's difficult to break away from that sort of yoke that we've taken upon us. So oftentimes I like to read chapters like this because Monroe puts it in such an interesting way that it's mind-boggling. He starts out, if the human being has a second body, if that second body survives what we call death, if personality and character continue to exist in this new old form, what then? Again, an age-old question that pleads for an answer. To date, in 12 years of non-physical activities, I find no evidence to substantiate the biblical notions of God and afterlife in a place called heaven. Perhaps I found this and simply haven't recognized it. It's quite possible. It may be that I am not qualified. On the other hand, much of what I have encountered could be some basics which have been distorted through hundreds of years. Let's start with prayer, which is supposed to be a direct communication with God, as we are taught to pray today. It is as if a chemical formula is recited without any knowledge of the original intent or meaning of the ingredients. Or the way our children sing, "London Bridge is Falling Down." with no knowledge of the original meaning of the song. Our entire civilization is filled with such irrational habits. Evidently, prayer is one of these. Somewhere, someone knew how to pray. You tried to teach others. A few learned the methodology. Others absorbed only the words, and the words themselves became altered and changed over the years. Gradually, the technique was lost, until accidentally rediscovered periodically through the ages. In the latter cases, only rarely has the rediscoverer been able to convince others that the old established way is not quite right. This is all I can report. The old established way is not enough. Or, as I say, perhaps I am not qualified. Worse still, it may be that my prayer training was insufficient or improper. At any rate, it didn't work for me. Here is an illustration on one non-physical excursion. I was speeding through nothing back to the physical, with everything apparently well under control. Without warning, I rammed into a solid wall of some impenetrable material. I wasn't hurt, but I was utterly shocked. The material was hard and solid, and seemed to be made of huge plates of steel, overlapping slightly and welded together. This is when he's discussing an astral projection experience here, when he ran into this wall. He was coming back to the physical, right? This guy is experienced. Each had a slight curvature as if part of a globe. I tried to push through it, but could not. I went up, down, to the right, and to the left. I was absolutely sure my physical body lay beyond this barrier. After what seemed an hour of scratching, clawing, and pushing at this barrier, I prayed. I used every prayer I'd ever learned and made up a few special ones, and I meant every word more than I had ever meant anything in my life. I was that frightened. Nothing happened. I was still plastered against the barrier, unable to get through and back to my physical body. I panicked. I clawed, screamed, and sobbed. After this proved futile, I finally calmed down, only out of emotional exhaustion. Feeling lost, I lay there and rested, clinging to the cold, hard wall. I don't know how long I lay there until the ability to think objectively returned. Now, this is, I'm reading from the book Journeys Out of the Body by Robert A. Monroe, and he's talking about the Bible and what he experienced as far as the supernatural. He was having an astral projection, and he was out of his body, and he was trying to get back in, and he was confronted with this wall. In case you just tuned in, I'm in the middle of reading about his experience with the confrontation of this steel-like wall where he could not get back into his body. And this is something you need to know about. I don't know how long I lay there until the ability to think objectively returned, but it did. I couldn't stay there forever, or at least I didn't want to. It seemed an impossible situation, where before had I encountered an apparently impossible situation. Where? When did I have this impossible situation? I remembered. Years before, a friend and I purchased an airplane whose flight characteristics we didn't know. The only reason we bought this plane was that it was cheap and in good condition. After several practice flights around the field, we decided to take it up for acrobatics. With borrowed parachutes, we took off and headed up to around 10,000 feet. We took it through several lazy eights, a few sloppy loops, several spins. Everything seemed all right. After climbing back to altitude, we nosed the ship down slightly and popped stick and rudder to go into a snap roll. The next thing we knew, we were in a spin. We centered stick and forward the accepted recovery procedure. It had worked beautifully before, but not this time. The spin became flatter, faster, and was developing a whip-like action. Opposite rudder against the spin, bursts of power. None had any effect on the spin. If anything, the spin worsened and the ground was coming up fast. Bill looked around from the front cockpit, his face totally white. He yelled at me over the wind roar, "We better get out of here." I was ready to leave too. The only thing that kept me there a few more seconds was the possible loss of the airplane for which I had saved so long. I reasoned, "We tried everything except a procedure that violates the rules. The one thing not to do if you're in a spin, pull back on the stick. What did I have to lose?" I pulled back on the stick. The ship straightened out of the spin immediately and gathered flying speed. I rolled it until the earth was where it belonged. We landed safely and crawled out shakily and sat on the ground. We had fallen into an outside spin. Neither of us had seen such a spin before, much less tried one. I remembered the outside spin. I tried to apply the concept as I lay there panting against the barrier. Forward, up, down, right, left, no good. There was just one remaining direction, although my knowledge said definitely it was not right. It couldn't make things any worse to try, so I did. And only a few moments later, I was back in the physical, shaken, but safe. Which way? It was obvious, in hindsight. Away from the barrier. Back in the direction from which I had been traveling. Why this worked, I don't know. Nor do I know what the barrier was. Perhaps it could be rationalized that prayer did work. I did get back, didn't I? If it did, it was not in the manner that religion taught me. No helping angel came hurrying to give me aid and comfort. Another time I was visiting my brother and his family overnight. Shortly after retiring to the guest room, I went to bed for some much-needed rest. If it has any bearing, the headboard of my bed backed against the wall, separating my room from that of my 4-year-old niece. Her bed was directly against the same wall. As I stretched out in the dark, the familiar surge of vibrations came, and I decided to slip out of my body for a moment, just to test in this condition away from home. The moment I left the physical, I became aware of 3 beings in the room. I stayed cautiously close to my physical body as they came nearer. They started to pull at me, not hard, but deliberately, as if to see what I would do. They were having a good time at it. I tried to stay calm, but there were 3 of them. I wasn't sure I could get back into the physical quickly enough before they pulled me away. So I prayed. Again. I used every prayer I knew. I asked God to help me. I prayed in the name of Jesus Christ for help. I tried a few saints and I heard of through my Catholic wife. The result? My tormentors laughed loudly and worked me over more enthusiastically. Listen to him pray to his gods, one chuckled most contemptuously. Listen to him. I think I got a little angry after that. I began to push back, got close to my physical body, and dove in. And I wasn't exactly fighting back, but I certainly didn't remain passive. I sat up in the physical, most relieved to be back. Even as I sat up, I heard a child crying. It was coming from the room beyond the wall. I waited several minutes, expecting my sister-in-law to come and calm the little girl and get her back to sleep. After some 10 minutes, the little girl, Jay, still had not stopped. I got up and went out to the adjoining bedroom. My sister-in-law had the little girl, who was still sobbing deeply in her arms, and was trying to comfort her. I asked what was wrong and could I help. "She'll be all right in a little while, I think," my sister-in-law replied. "She must have had a nightmare or bad dream, and I can't seem to wake her up." I asked how long the girl had been crying. "Oh, just a few minutes before you came in. She isn't like this. She usually sleeps very soundly." I offered again to help if needed and went back to my room. Sometime later, little Jay quieted down and evidently went to sleep. Was my niece's trance-like nightmare a coincidence? Or perhaps some new praying technique is needed on my part? There are many more such incidents, but they followed much the same pattern when I attempted the conventional and accepted approach to prayer. There are, however, more positive prospects to report regarding heaven and hell. If they exist, they are somewhere in locale 2. In non-physical trips to locale 2, often there is a layer or area which one must pass through, as mentioned earlier. It seems to be the part of locale 2 closest to here now, and in some way most related. It is a gray-black hungry ocean where the slightest motion attracts nibbling and tormenting beings. It is as if you are the bait dangling in this vast sea. If you move slowly and do not react to the curious fish who come to investigate, you pass through without much incident. Let me say that again. If you move slowly and do not react to the fish who come to investigate, you pass through without much incident. Move violently and fight back, then more excited denizens come rushing in to bite, pull, push, shove. Could this be the borders of hell? It is easy to conclude that a momentary penetration of this nearby layer would bring demons and devils to mind as the chief inhabitants. They seem subhuman, yet have an evident ability to act and think independently. Who and what are they? I don't know. I haven't taken the trouble to stay there long enough to find out. Only by terrified trial and error did I find the method to pass through in reasonable peace. In these worlds, where thoughts are not only things, but everything, including you, your poison or perfection is of your own making. If you are a remorseless killer, you may end up in that part of locale too, where all are of the same design. This truly would be hell for such people, for there would be no innocent, defenseless victims. Project this outward, and you can begin to perceive the myriad variations. Your destination in the heaven or hell of locale 2 seems to be grounded completely within the framework of your deepest, constant, and perhaps non-conscious, motivations, emotions, and personality drives. The most consistent and strongest of these act as your homing device when you enter this realm. I'm sure of this because it always works this way when I've traveled non-physically in locale 2. It works this way whether I want it to or not. The least stray desire at the wrong time or a deep-seated emotion I wasn't aware of diverts my trip in that like direction. Some of the resulting destinations have had all the aspects of hell to me. Others might possibly be construed as heaven, and some differ in practice only slightly from our activities in the here now. So, if locale 2 seems to have portions of hell and doesn't quite live up to our notions of heaven, what then? Where do we look for the guidepost? Where are the God in heaven that we worship? Have I missed something? And yet at times, in visiting locale 2, a very unusual event periodically occurs. It makes no difference where in locale 2, the event is the same. In the midst of normal activity, whatever it may be, there is a distant signal, almost like heraldic trumpets. Everyone takes the signal calmly, and with it, everyone stops speaking or whatever he may be doing. It is the signal that he or they is coming through his kingdom. This is getting heavy, isn't it? There is no awestruck prostration or falling down on one's knees. Rather, the attitude is most matter-of-fact. It is an occurrence to which all are accustomed. And to comply takes absolute precedence over everything. There are no exceptions. At the signal, each living thing lies down. My impression is on their backs, bodies arched to expose the abdomen, with head turned to one side so that one does not see him as he passes by. The purpose seems to be to form a living road over which he can travel. I've gleaned the idea that occasionally he will select someone from this living bridge, and that person is never seen or heard from again. The purpose of the abdominal exposure is an expression of faith and complete submissiveness, the abdomen being the most vulnerable part of the body or the area that can suffer damage most easily. There is no movement, not even thought, as he passes by. Everything has come to a momentary standstill, full and complete, while he passes. Okay. I have been reading from Journeys Out of the Body by Robert A. Monroe, a Doubleday book which was published in 1971, one of my favorite books. It's an excellent book to understand some of the higher realms, or at least to think about it. So we're discussing this being that he encountered in an astral projection. Is this God, or God's son, or his representative? Three times I have gone to a place that I cannot find words to describe accurately. Again, it is this vision, this interpretation, the temporary visitation to this place or state of being that brings the message we have heard so often throughout the history of man. I am sure that this may be part of the ultimate heaven as our religions conceive it. It must also be the nirvana, the samadhi, the supreme experience related to us by the mystics of the ages. It is truly a state of being, very likely interpreted by the individual in many different ways. To me, it was a place or condition of pure peace, yet exquisite emotion. It was as if you were floating in a warm, soft clouds, where there is no up or down, where nothing exists as a separate piece of matter. The warmth is not merely around you, it is of you and through you. Your perception is dazzled and overwhelmed by the perfect environment. The cloud in which you float is swept by rays of light in shapes and hues that are constantly changing, and each is good as you bathe in them as they pass over you. Ruby red rays of light or something beyond what we know as light, because no light ever felt this meaningful. All the colors of the spectrum come and go constantly, never harshly, and each brings a different soothing or restful happiness. It is as if you are within and part of the clouds surrounding an eternally glowing sunset. And with every changing pattern of living color, you also change. You respond and drink into the eternity of the blues, yellows, greens, and reds, and the complexities of the intermediates. All are familiar to you. This is where you belong. This is home. As you move slowly and effortlessly through the cloud, there is music around you. It is not something of which you become aware. It is there all the time, and you vibrate in the harmony with the music. Again, this is more than the music you knew back there. It is only those harmonies, the delicate and dynamic melodic passages, the multi-voiced counterpoint, the poignant overtones, it is only those that have evoked in you the deep incoherent emotion back there. The mundane is missing. Choirs of human-sounding voices echo in wordless song. Infinite patterns of strings and all shades of subtle harmony interweave in cyclical yet developing themes. And you resonate with them. There is no source from which the music comes. It is there, all around you, in you. You are a part of it, and it is you. It is the purity of a truth of which you had had only a glimpse. This is the feast and the tiny tidbits you tasted before back there had made your hope for the existence of the whole, the nameless emotion, longing nostalgia, sense of destiny that you felt back there when you stared at the cloud-layered sunset in Hawaii, when you stood quietly among the tall waving trees in the silent forest, and a musical selection, passage or song, recalled memories of the past or brought forth a longing for which there was no associated memory. When you longed for the place where you belonged, whether city, town, country, nation, or family, there are now fulfilled. You are home. You are where you belong, where you are always should have been. Well, you know, in reading this book, obviously it takes you away. And it sets you up and it qualifies you and it gives you permission to take on certain of these experiences. That's why I always tell people if you get into meditation and astral projection and channeling, you should either be supervised or trained or have someone around to help you. Because I, as someone who has done much astral projection and much meditation, are familiar with these locales. In other words, I have been in this place. I'm not trying to wave my flag or spank my ego, but I have been in this place that Robert Monroe discusses, where you feel cloud-like and surrounded by this billowy softness of bliss and happiness. And I did go through a vibration or an area, a realm of question before I got to this realm of billowy softness, which I tend to think is the limbo realm or the realm that people theorize where poltergeists or lost souls or lost entities that have not made it for some reason or other to the higher realm, the heavenly realm. So in an astral projection sense, I believe that we go through this realm, this limbo stage, before we get to the heavenly stage in our astral projections and our meditations. Now, this is where I believe nightmares come from. In other words, if you are a person that's not in control of your body and not in control of your clarity and don't know how to protect or love yourself and others, then when your astral body is trying to get through to the heavenly realm, to the dream state, it could be trapped in this limbo realm because of the fear and anxiety and worry and vulnerability that a person might have. That's why a lot of people use crystals and celestite, because they protect themselves. It allows them to have more clarity, more vivid control, and allows them to continue and walk through that other realm to get to the higher place. The interesting part of this topic, called Journeys Out of the Body, is that the chapter I was reading from is called Cause the Bible Tells Me Soul. You know, and notice that when Robert Monroe was out of his body, in his spiritual state, in his astral body, and he was traveling through the realms in places that I have confirmed exist, myself many times, so I know it's not bull, right? That's why I've read it to you today, that he really did not run into any of the traditional definitions of God that you might read about in the Bible. You get my point? Like, the essence of spirit that he experienced was something that was so unbelievable that it really could not be described in human terms, and yet so many of us are sort of hornswaggled or conditioned or sort of locked in to these ancient fundamental belief systems of religion on this planet, at the curse, at the negative ramification that if we don't embrace these religious beliefs, then we're going to be punished and eternally damned to that realm that he discusses that he passed through in order to get to the higher level, the billowy cloud-like area. If you recorded this show, I think you're fortunate, because in case you can't find this book, at least you have a good portion of that chapter from Robert Monroe's book, Journey Out of the Body, a Doubleday book, an anchor book also, Doubleday anchor book, where you can definitely relate to some options, some alternatives to what is really happening. See, like it's funny that we here in this third dimension are really quick to come up with hypotheses about what the universe is all about. And all these people, all these saints and philosophers and prophets and biblical authors, you know, they come up with these issues, right? In these books, the Quran, the Bible, whatever, that dictate supposedly how the rest of us are supposed to believe in God. But, you know, for me, what I have found is this is an individual thing. Because God is an essence, a force of such incomprehensible power and complexity and complication on the one hand, that for me, by keeping it simple, it's a lot easier to digest. You know, and I know it's a lot of people, they still won't want to let go of the Father and the Son philosophy, which is fine, because that has its own reality. You know, whatever reality you wish to accept, that's the reality that I think will be. If you do, in fact, believe in a heaven and hell, and you do, in fact, believe you have sinned terribly in this lifetime, then when you do die and you do go into the judgment period, then perhaps you will condemn yourself to some kind of lower realm. I do believe that is possible. That's why I think it's absolutely important that we study and understand this stuff. So I chose to read this chapter today to kind of change the vibration and the tone of the show somewhat, to just show you a little deeper side to myself and what I do when I'm not on the air and when I'm not studying astrology, because even though I do love astrology and I embrace it and I think it's important, at the same time, there's so much more to it than that. It is true that I definitely believe that astrology is a root source foundation to opening up massive windows of consciousness to these higher realms. Because I believe understanding this dimension, this universe astrologically, is a pathway to understanding the human soul and God in its overwhelming significance. And this is KFOX 93.5 FM, the Astrology Hour, Astrological Metaphysical Radio.